guess can share his screen. Any members?
Didn't originally ever hear you.
Hopefully they remembered it's at 3. It's a special time from the normal 4. put that? Okay, now it is not. Okay. Now there's not muted. So. Yeah, so we do have the motions here, though. So,
yeah,
sorry. The room was muted, so the recording's not going to have the first part of it. So, yeah. All right, so, yeah, so we have that. As the discussions have gone through the different various committees and at City Council, one thing that's popped out is a preference to have a warning sign version of this regulatory sign. So something that has like a yellow background warning sign, maybe not not saying speed limit on there, just 50 miles per hour with a yellow background. And at BPAC, one sign that was shown here that they like was this one in City of Richmond. There's a group called Common Ground that helped form the sign, got all the graphics for it and some of the messaging on this. And it's be kind, say hello, ride slow. And if we were to pick a sign like this, is something that we can customize for Emeryville's sake and have a custom message for us, or do the same exact message if we wanted to, and customize it to our background and something like that and put it on our trail. Another sign that the BPAC preferred was a sign that had all the rules listed. As we went out to do a field visit to the Greenway, we have some existing park regulation signs out there, so we could take some of those rules off that sign, put it onto a sign like this, get more graphics on there, and get it a little bit more simplistic, you know, kind of like this path etiquette sign. So this is an example of our park rule sign right now. It's a little bit hard to read, and you got to really go up in there and read all the EMC municipal codes on there. Just compare the two, you know, how it is. And here's an example of how the signs can look. This is not this very, very draft. We just kind of put something, slapped something together, just give you an example of what these signs can look like. And so our warning bike warning speed limit sign or speed warning sign would be the 12 miles per hour with a bike symbol on there. Our be kind, say hello, ride slow sign with our Emeryville Greenway logo that we have on our counter. We've reused that same logo right here. We could do the same logo on a trail etiquette rule sign, just like that. And so today we have a proposed action item to recommend signage for the Greenway as part of the upcoming speed limit signage installation by Public Works, and hoping to get just a little bit of feedback. And we don't need to finalize what the exact signs are. We can kick it back to BPAC if you'd like, or just give enough guidance to have Public Works make the signs and do this the next 2-3 months is kind of the idea behind this.
Thank you, Ryan. Any clarifying questions?
But could you go back to the advisory signs and just so keep going, I think, to the first set. Yeah, this one, when I first saw these, I did like how the caution, slow down your wheels, yield to pedestrians. I thought that was something that grabs people's attention. I'm kind of curious if, Ryan, I guess, were you at the, unfortunately, I wasn't at the BikePed discussion. How did the discussion go with these? Did anybody have thoughts on that one, or they just wanted something much simpler?
You know, I actually wasn't at that meeting. I got the recap, but we did have Bill Toss, who was in the room. They can give us up.
No, they liked the messaging and the signage, and you know, John's was on currently on BPAC and maybe speak to that as well, but they liked the messaging and the signage, but they preferred the etiquette signage from the Richmond sign. They liked the messaging there. They felt it was common sense to yield to the peds, and that a bicyclist wouldn't need to be told to yield to the pedestrians, and that the kinder message of the etiquette sign, the Richmond etiquette sign, was kind of more friendly. They like the friendliness of it.
Yeah. Are we looking to select 3 signs? Is that what, would we be? Because like, I see 3 different ones that were selected. I'd like the Be Kind one is certainly a great message, but would that be in addition to, say, one of these?
Yeah, our idea was in the packet of doing three signs, and let me show that. Sorry, I should have that. So to do something like this, and forgive the kind of simple graphics here, is to do Greenway rule signs, these GRs, at the lead of the path. So to, okay, just to orient ourselves, this is Ocean Avenue right here, if you see my cursor down here. Mm-hmm. And so as you get into the kind of shared sidewalk and DG path area of the Greenway, where it's that type of format of the Greenway, we would have the Greenway rules right at the beginning of that area. The only other area where the Greenway rules would be at the border up here at the top of 67th. There would be no more other Greenway rules. So it'd only be at the top and at the bottom of this section. And then at every block, we would have the two signs as like a combo leading into each block base. So it'd be the yellow advisory speed limit sign and the Greenway etiquette sign right on top of each other, like a combo, coming into and out of the blocks. So, and that's going each way. And that'd be our proposal for that.
I see. So it would be the, that Be Kind sign would be repeated throughout. I think that's a good message. I do like that. Personally, I know this is a time for a question, but I can share this during comments. So I'm more interested in these kind of etiquette signs. If the chair is okay with it, maybe we could ask, John, were you at the,
yes, I was.
Could you recap some of the discussion on those signs? And could we go back to those three signs?
It was quite dynamic. It wasn't a shoo-in, meaning everyone had their opinions. And so we actually, integrated a lot of the preferences into the, it's not what to go to the final three signs you have there. And so we integrated the Be Kind, Say Hello. Frankly, I was saying that isn't speaking well enough, but I was one that liked the right hand one with the etiquette, and the chair also liked that. Jesse said he wanted to have a statement for enforcement. And so we had those kinds of concepts discussed. Naturally, the miles per hour. I see your point about keeping it simple, and in that one sign you called out, it was kind of, I'll just say it was kind of brushed aside, because they were looking more at what these new designs were. So that was kind of an old design. So to be honest, it kind of fell by the wayside in the one you liked, you initially called out. But these came up as an integration of the ideas and preferences of people.
I see. Thank you, John. Okay, no, that's very helpful with the locations and kind of what we're talking about. So that's it for my questions.
I don't think I have any questions. Maybe we'll move to public comment. I know we received a couple of online comment cards beforehand. We've both seen them, so we'll make you repeat them. Public comment in the room who would like to comment on item 5.1? Sorry. 5.1. Not seeing any. Okay, we'll move to discussion. More? Your thoughts?
From the first time we had this discussion, I've kind of thought a bit more. I saw some of the public comments you received. One that we received today was kind of interesting in that it was somebody riding on their bicycle, probably not very fast. She didn't know how fast she was going, but it wasn't an electric bike. But there was still a dog walker who was, telling her to be careful. And it kind of became clear it's not a function of speed really at all. It's really, how we kind of correlate speed with how quickly you can respond to like a dog or child crossing your way. But maybe the overall message does need to be one about exercising caution. So personally, I've pulled back. I don't, you know, if somebody's going 12 miles per hour, that doesn't put them in the clear. You know, you can do plenty of damage and be discourteous at 12 miles per hour. So in lieu of this kind of, let's call it like a speed limit type sign, I've kind of been leaning personally towards, and could we go back to the, I do like the caution, slow down your wheels, yield to pedestrians. I think that's clear. It's yellow. It says caution. It's grabbing people's attention. I see how the other, the white bike yield to peds is, you know, it's cleaner and simpler. But I also think it's kind of easy to overlook and not really catch people's attention. So I'm kind of leaning towards, in lieu of that sign, the caution advisory, just to really let people know that they should be exercising caution. It's not really about yielding to peds. You think about that as like a intersection type advisory, right? Like this is more about be aware of the entirety of your surroundings, especially pedestrians, you know, dog walkers, right? So I think there's just more that's captured by an advisory to be caution and the specific instruction to slow down your wheels. Slowing down your wheels, that covers, actually on my way over here, I was on the Greenway and there was somebody blazing down on a two-wheel high-powered moped, but it was probably over 20 miles an hour. There was nobody else on the path at the time, so I think she was being safe. But you know, it's still wheels that might need to slow down at some point. So I think for that reason, I do like this caution, slow down your wheels. And it doesn't sound like the bike ped committee, you know, specifically debated that one specifically and said, no, we don't like that. It was kind of sounds like it was a wide ranging discussion.
Would you like me to add in?
Yes.
I like the color, the white is too easily lost. So we like text. And so we could, but if you wanted yield to peds, they would have to be yellow. So we called out yellow. And in the bringing up the pet one, we did have a lot of discussion around that. And that's one of the reasons why we limited it to just on leash, even though we realized the example that was called out by that speaker card, that was not called out. And so we said, we have to rely on individuals to use. We actually customized one side. This is your path rather than this is a path for everyone. We made it something that was personal. I don't remember if you put that into the signs, the final signs, but it was the phraseology to get people to think how they would act if it was in front of their own house or something. This is your place. And so there's a certain amount of etiquette that has to come from within. And so the dog leash one is the most complicated one. You can't put up enough rules. I mean, you have to give a lecture. So that one takes responsibility of the individual. Okay, sorry.
No, thanks for that, John. I think it's helpful to hear what was discussed at that meeting, especially since we do delegate quite a bit to the bike ped committee. I do think, you know, going back now to the you know, the trail etiquette signage, I think when you say like leashed pets only, I think there's that kind of entails like a certain amount of responsibility. It's kind of implied like that your pet is not like on one of those like 40-foot like leashes and they're just like running in circles. It's kind of a way of saying like keep control of your pet, right? So I do think that the path etiquette, it's a big improvement over the especially, can you go back to the Emeryville branded one? I suppose
that, yeah,
Yeah, it's a really big improvement over the kind of the municipal code version that, you know, I've lived here for 15 years. I don't think I've ever read in, you know, to completion. So I do like that one. And then I do like, instead of this 12 mile per hour, I like the caution one. And then I wonder if we're getting into like sign overload, right? Like, what is the value of having a caution sign then stacked on top of a be kind, say hello? Like, I think that's kind of a cute message. It's a good message. But really, we're just trying to tell people, you know, exercise caution, right? That's the, you know, if somebody doesn't want to say hello, they just don't have to. But I think we've kind of cultivated that culture in other ways. So I can kind of take it or leave it with this middle sign and maybe just go to, you know, a sign urging the exercise of caution. Otherwise, once you start stacking signs, it kind of reminds me of the, you know, you go to San Francisco and there's like parking restrictions and there's just like six different like things and you're trying to reconcile the different messages and figure out if you can park your car. So I don't think we need to get there. You know, I think our signs should be like, what's like added value? And it might be a bit redundant to have two on top of each other.
That's helpful. So just to confirm, so you're of this, you're, what I'm hearing is maybe not the middle one, and then the speed limit sign replace that with the some kind of caution, you know, slow down.
Sorry. Yeah, they caution yield to pedestrians or slow down your wheels. Right. I do like that message because slowing down your wheels applies beyond bicycles.
Sure.
And then also the entryway
information. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. No, I think that seems reasonable. I like these options. I think I agree that, you know, at a certain point you just have too much going on. And I do, I like the middle one just because it kind of matches the vibe, I think, of the Greenway. And also, like, I think the vibe just exists. Like, I don't want people to be so focused on the signs that they lose sight of the fact that it's a nice place to be. So I'm comfortable kind of deferring to Public Works on the details. So
yeah, if I can add on, one of the staff discussion points was, you know, how many to place, where to place. So like we could, with that, the say hello sign, like the messaging sign, place in the middle of each of these block faces and do a two-sided version of that sign. So there's only three of these total in this whole stretch instead of having six total. So it could cut down on like, so sign clutter, you know, and you know, we could probably have it off to the side so it's not necessarily like right smack dab in the pathway, you know. So it's just,
yeah. What about, because that message is kind of, you know, it's general, it's welcoming people to the Greenway, it's a bit higher level than the rules of the Greenway. What if, since it would only be two locations, what if you have that sign, you know, welcoming people to the Greenway, telling them to be kind, and then followed with the rules? What if that was actually bounding the Greenway? And then in the middle, we, you know, avoid a proliferation of signs and just have the, you know, the caution, slow down your wheels. So then we still get to have that message, you know, enforcing what we hope becomes the culture of that Greenway. I'm curious what
I think that seems good to me. I think that to some extent the rule, the be kind, say hello, ride slow, encompasses, I think, the rules as well. So they can, you know, if someone doesn't want to sit down and look at all the rules, that's just like, okay, I get the idea of what this space should be. And I think, you know, I think to your the point of previous conversations, like I know that there are certainly there have been people moving go too quickly on the Greenway at times, and I get that. And also, like, the vast majority, I think, of people are having fun and riding slow and saying hi. I don't think we want to remind people, but I don't think we need to legislate, you know, exactly how people are acting on the pathway. So I think that makes sense. I just want to also, you know, I think at the last meeting, just the I was speaking with one of the members of our police force, and they were reminding me that just because there isn't a strict rule of, you know, you have to ride at this mile per hour, like if someone is doing something unsafe, they have discretion to step in. So, you know, the goal is certainly not to police the greenway heavily, but like if someone is going 65 miles per hour on a moped, like they have discretion to do something. So I think just because not every single rule is on the rule sheet doesn't mean that they, you know, bouncy houses will still not be allowed in the middle. I read the bus. I think that's
maybe just one other thought, I guess, before we decide on having that middle sign then combined or on top of or below, however we want to do it. Maybe it probably makes sense to be more on top of the right hand one bounding the greenway. Do we need to be concerned about somebody copyright that? Like, I, you know, or do we need to license it? Because I think if things get too complicated with that, I'm also okay just dropping it. I do think the Emeryville Greenway branding is very clear and on the right hand one. So I'm kind of okay without the Be Kind, Say Hello, Ride Slow one.
Yeah, we definitely did a, that's what we said, draft, where we'll check in with the Common Ground Group, the nonprofit out of Richmond, on the use of the logo. But Bike East Bay worked with them on the messaging and the logo. So they did say that they have the good contact there and they'll work with us on sharing any of the graphics with this as well. So it sounded like it was like kind of almost like a shareable format. So we'll check in on that. But okay. If there's any hurdle there, we'll drop it and come up with something
else. Yeah, if there's any hurdles, I'm okay just proceeding with the right hand one.
Yeah. Okay. So and then I think to be just going back through looking at the caution, slow down your wheels. I'm guessing just because it's on this slide doesn't mean that this would necessarily be the final version. And I'm, you know, once we make a motion, comfortable sort of deferring to staff on exactly what makes sense. And location, my only point on location, I think you're already thinking of this, is just make sure that it's not, the sign is not in the way of people moving through the space. Would you like to make a
could I ask, can you go back to the caution, slow down your wheels, yield to pedes? Would that not be a final version? Or I guess what sort of revision would that undergo if we selected that one?
We grabbed this one from basically a random sign website. So it's not like an MET, like a California regulatory or warning sign. It's not a so we probably order it from that website or something like that. So we could switch out the word caution is my only thing, or take out the word yield to pedestrians off the bottom would probably be the only change. But maybe just leave caution, take off yield to pedestrians. So our only message is slow down your wheels. That would be maybe be the change. But,
or
I think the yield to pedestrian, just because it sounded like one of BPAC's comments was... Okay. Discomfort with the yield to pedes message. I don't know if
was it discomfort or they liked the yield to pedes.
Did I mishear that?
Well, it was discomfort. Okay. I think it was just that it was common sense.
Oh, okay. That was my only. You know, it's, I can imagine it getting lost in the bottom. I don't think it's doing any damage, but I don't have a strong opinion on that.
I think one of the part of the appeal of the caution, slow down your wheels. I could see at the bottom. If that text gets too small, that could be yield to pedes, right? Because you shrink when you have to squeeze more text on there. But this is a nice compromise because, you know, we started with a regulatory speed limit sign, right? So this kind of, it still preserves some of the strength, I think, of the message. So I'll make a motion to proceed with the caution, slow down your wheels, yield to pedes or pedestrians as the sign that goes, you know, recurs along the greenway. And then the bounding the greenway at the entrances would be the Emeryville Greenway rules, and I guess and tentatively, if there's no hassle, we can put the be kind, say hello, ride slow sign. But I don't have you know, it's kind of optional, but it would really be the right hand one.
Okay. And then did you have a strong opinion on whether this goes back to PPAC or not?
Oh, you mean to have additional discussion, like to if they think that this is, I guess what I'm, from the recapped conversation, it doesn't sound like BPAC. You know, their main message that I've heard is that they generally don't want a speed limit type sign, right? But then they were kind of all over the place. Otherwise, it doesn't necessarily, I don't think that they are explicitly, they want something advisory. So I think this is within the, within what they gave us. Because otherwise, if we keep going back and forth to BPAC, I feel like that just becomes very inefficient.
Sure. And I just want to confirm. Okay. Well, I'm comfortable that I'll second that motion. Can we get a roll call?
Yes. Chair Matthew Solomon.
Aye.
And Member David Moore.
Aye.
Motion passed.
Thank you. Excellent. That makes that's item 5.1. So we'll move into item 5.2, Bicycle and Pedestrian Advisory Committee member appointments with April.
Thank you, Member Solomon. I am April Florence, City Clerk, and I am here today because you are the inaugural committee making the advisory body appointments at the council committee level. So if you'll remember back in September of 25, council approved the new process to review the applications here. We're hoping that it's an increased efficiency and makes the process less cumbersome for applicants and gives you an opportunity to more thoroughly review the advisory body composition and applicants in a less formal setting than the council meeting. So just to recap, the recruitment was open from March 20th to May 1st. We extended it by 1 week because we had received enough applicants, and we ended up receiving quite a few at the end. So BPAC is made up of 9 members. There's currently 5 vacancies. We received 12 applications, which were all included in your packet. I know that you both have attachment A and attachment B in the packet, but I thought it might just be helpful with all the names listed in front of you, printed out copies for you to have. So the current members are listed on attachment A, and you'll see there's 5 terms expiring June 30th. We had 2 incumbents apply. There is 1 business representative position available, and there are 2 applicants, if you look on attachment B, that are available to be put into that slot. So the first one is Sequoia Alexander and Chris Stratton. They do not live in Emeryville. They work in Emeryville. And so if they were appointed, they would be appointed as a business member. But again, there's only 1 of those positions available. So I'm just here to help you with the process if you need anything. I'm hoping that you had a chance to take a look at the applications that were included in the packet. I had mentioned, Member Solomon had asked outside of the meeting if there was any attendance issues with new with returning applicants, and I talked to the committee secretary and there are not. So. Guys have any questions? I don't know. I'm also open to handling this differently in the future. If you have a better way that that we could do this, I am completely open to that. This is the first time going through this, so please provide any feedback that you'd like to me.
We also have a few of the members that are the applicants here.
Yeah. Great. Thank you all for coming. I guess before we start, do you have any
questions? No questions.
Okay. Well, thank you, April. I don't think I have any questions. So let's do public comment. Right, any online comment cards for this item?
There is no.
Okay. Great. So then for those of you in the room who've applied, happy to give you all 2 minutes to introduce yourself if you'd like. You don't have to. And I guess say whatever you want. It's your 2 minutes. And then we can ask questions, of course, as come up. But if anyone wants to do anything.
I do not know if
I can start. Okay.
Okay. I can start.
Great. Thanks, John.
As you know, my name is John Suter. I'm a current BPAC member. I'm a pedestrian, and I'm a senior citizen. My objective is to improve Emeryville for those cohorts. Emeryville's age-friendly action plan has steps for improvement in calling out improved safety at crosswalks and prioritizing sidewalk maintenance and repair. My first term on BPAC had those in focus, and I compliment the City Council as well as Public Works for all of the improvement that I've witnessed here in my first term. I mean, the speed limit adjustment as called out here, the most recent quick fix for the Christie Powell, which I'm known for being outspoken, and I said, finally, after 2 decades. And so, I mean, I really do hold the current council in high esteem, because I'll go out onto the political podium and say, because all I heard were excuses in the past. Okay, so anyway, the long-term loop project also is adding to that safety. In addition, I'm assisting in the application to qualify Emeryville as a pedestrian-friendly community as requested by the mayor at the annual project report by VPAF. So I would appreciate your reappointment so I can continue my efforts. Thank you.
Thank you, John. Appreciate it.
My name is Chris Stratton. I work in Emeryville. I've lived in homeowner in Berkeley, South Berkeley. So I commute to Emeryville every day by bike. I'm a cyclist and urbanist advocate. I heard from Robert Prince. I'm a member of Walk Bike Berkeley. I heard from Robert Prince that these positions were open and concerned needed. Throw my hat in the ring. This question about it. Part of that passion derives from having 2 young children, as does my sleep deprivation.
So, yeah, your consideration. Thanks, Chris. We're not alone on the sleep deprivation front, I can say that. Excellent. Anyone else? Okay.
I don't know.
Thank you both for being here in person. It's April 1. Slight downside of this approach is I feel like not as many people are in the room, but that's okay, as at the council meeting. But maybe that's a good thing because it goes a little faster.
Well, we got the app.
The most other agencies don't interview advisory body. It's an odd setting to do it in a formal council meeting. So I'm hoping that this forum is a little less formal and people would be more likely to come.
Yes. Well said. I think that is true. Yes. Okay. David, any thoughts, considerations?
Having gone through the applications, I think a lot of the applicants are very well qualified. In a more scarce year, we'd probably be lucky to have any group of the 5 of them. So I do think we have a hard decision. That being said, I do tend to, I think an incumbent who comes to the meeting, I greatly appreciate that. So thank you, John. And I do think John represents the the walking community, which is sometimes outnumbered by bikers. Not that they're at odds. I think most people do bike and walk, or pedestrians as well. Chris, I greatly appreciate you coming, and I think having two kids is who you want to bring on these trails is a great qualification. And I saw you organize your kids' bike bus. Is that right?
Yeah,
and that's no small feat. I have a hard enough time participating in my kids' bike bus in the morning. I guess I'm kind of thinking out loud here. If we're picking five people, I would want to nominate Chris as the I guess business rep, since that's what he's qualifies for. And then John as a community member. And then in terms of maybe what I could do is I can share the names of the other people who I think really stood out. But I'd be interested in hearing your thoughts, and if we overlap, maybe we can just go with those some of the folks that we overlap on. So I thought Sequoia Alexander was a very impressive candidate, the volunteer at the Bike Annex, repairing bikes, robotics engineer. I'm generally biased towards engineers since I am one, so I kind of like that style of thinking that sometimes comes with it, but overall lots of enthusiasm for biking. Mike Hansen is an urban planner for SFMTA, uses Bay Wheels. I thought his application was very well thought out. So that was another person who really stood out to me. Eric Markley is an incumbent, which I think counts in his favor, but also being a grad student at Cal. So, it's a good perspective having a grad student there, and also volunteer at the Bike Annex. So I liked him. So those were the three that stood out the most. There were a few other that were actually quite good as well, but I think that would put me at five. That would be if we did go with those. But I did think Lauren Rath, Heather, Lauren Rath looked very good as well. Heather Rideau, and Renee as well. Renee and Marissa, I thought were so good.
Okay, thank you. I think we managed to name 10 of the 12. So,
I looked at them in order. Yeah. So I think my top three, if those make your... But yeah, I'll leave it to you.
Sure.
Can I make a comment? Thank you, Chair Solomon. So I just wanted to note that Chris Stratton and Sequoia Alexander, we can only have one business representative on the committee, and they are only eligible for that position. So of your top five, you've got two people in there that are business representative.
I see. Okay, well, in which case, thanks for pointing that out. Yeah, so we've got Chris here, and appreciate that. So I would bump Chris above Sequoia. So that would slightly change the list I provided, but I'm sure I still gave five people.
Yes. No, thank you for that. Yes, I agree with both Chris and John. Thank you both for being here. Goes a long way in my estimation. So I'm going to just check them off on my little list here. Not a final decision, but good to have that. And then I think my other thoughts, having served on BPEC for a couple of years, I think it's It's a great group of people, and we've been able to do a lot of great work. And also, I think diversity has been a bit of a challenge. I think especially it's a very male-heavy group. I think generally trends towards people who, you know, everyone walks, but I think trends towards people who bike a lot, which is great. And also, John's been very valuable in that he brings a slightly different perspective, which is much appreciated. So, but I think Mark Hansen also stood out. I know Eric has been on the committee for a couple of years now. And then who else did I? I had Kathy, Lauren, and Heather on my longer list as well. So I think of those, I think tend to defer to, I think Eric was only on the committee for a year, for, I think this is his second time being renewed. First time being renewed, I should say, second term. So, you know, I think incumbents who are engaged is, you know, would reward him with another term, and then would like to have some female representation, I guess, inferring based on people's names, which is...
Can I add, so it sounds like we have John, Chris, and then and Eric, the incumbent. So it's really just two more. Is that right?
I think you both had Mark.
Oh, and then we also had Mark. Maybe we just talked about the last one. Do you want to put Mark? Because Mark did stand out.
Up here.
I'm sorry.
I just started, so I might miss one or two.
Yeah, let me look back at my notes. So at least that kind of narrows things. So we know that we're looking for one more person, and preferably somebody who I'm hesitant to just say, okay, if based on somebody's gender, that's inherently you know, the perspective we need. But I do think somebody who can kind of encompass a range of positions, right? Mm-hmm. So we want somebody who talks about walking. People with kids is interesting because a kid on a bike or walking really checks off a lot of boxes. Yes. It's like they're meandering on the paths. They're tripping on like uneven pavement. They really, having had a kid who's like face planted a few times on pavement, they really kind of flesh out the problems, you know, in a useful way for us. Not great for the parent.
Both Lauren and Heather are primarily walkers, I guess, who maybe...
I did like both of theirs, yeah. And Lauren, Heather talked about her. Yeah, she's a new biker, which I thought was interesting. She says she's an inexperienced biker, mm-hmm. and she likes to walk everywhere. She has a four-year-old. And I think the path that she traverses to ECCL is an interesting one, because I feel like that's one that we want to be kid-friendly and parent-friendly.
So perhaps that's our...
So I'm kind of, I'm kind of leaning towards Heather in that case.
That, which is, yes, I'm comfortable with that.
And maybe just kind of looping back to the overall conversation and format. I do think this is it's a less stuffy environment, right? And quite frankly, we've never actually had a candid discussion the way we just had on the full council in 4 years. In fact, there's often very little discussion, or it takes place kind of offline. So I think that's a healthier dynamic, April. Great. Just some feedback. Yeah.
Yeah, this definitely works. Great. And for all of the candidates who are obviously listening in, I think, you know, hopefully people remain engaged because we have a great list. I think if someone drops off and opening comes up, do candidates who have previously applied, are they What's the process for
considering? So we are moving toward, other than the annual recruitment, which is this is what this is for all the terms that expire in June, we're opening up an ongoing recruitment process. You can apply at any time. We'll keep your application on file for a year. And if a vacancy comes up, so all of these people will stay in our file that are not selected, will stay in our files for a year. If a vacancy comes up, someone moves or needs to resign, we'll contact this group, find out if they're still interested, and then we'll forward the applications to the Transportation and Sustainability Committee for you to make a recommendation for an appointment.
Sounds good. Awesome.
I don't think I quite captured the fifth one. Did you get the fifth?
On the board, right?
Sorry, I on this call right here, I just started doing.
So we have doing Eric.
Did you do
Eric? Heather?
Yeah, I found Heather.
Okay.
Chris.
And not John. Lauren then. Okay.
Not Laura.
Okay.
Mark, Eric, Heather, Chris, and John.
Yeah, and I guess, you know, since I think I listed like 10 out of the 12 people who really stood out, if there is a future opening, please let's keep track of them and encourage them to reapply or be considered.
Yeah, of course, everyone is always welcome to go to the meetings if you're not on. Okay, so we need a motion for that?
We need a motion.
I will make a motion to approve Mark Hansen, Eric Markley, Heather Rudell, Chris Stratton, and John Suter to the EPAC seats.
I'll second.
Great. Chair Metzl?
Aye.
And Member Dave Moore?
Aye.
Motion passes.
Thank you. Thank you, John, Chris, for your
service. I agree. I think the recording of this will show a much clearer picture to new applicants as to the kinds of things that lead to being appointed. So I agree.
Appreciate that. Appreciate that.
Can I make one more comment?
Please.
About next steps. So these recommendations will go to the City Council, who will approve the full list of applicants at the June 16th meeting.
Okay. And that will be on consent calendar.
That will be on consent, yes. Hopefully.
Sounds good.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate you having me here today. And I hope that was helpful.
Always a pleasure. Do you have any transportation sustainability thoughts while you're here?
You do not. I'm like, okay, this is my inaugural meeting. And I'm thrilled to be here. Thank you.
I have any complaints on
traffic. Yeah, no, I don't have any complaints. No. Thank you,
though. Thank you. All right, with that, we will close item 5.2 and move to item 5.3, the SB1 project list fiscal year 26-27.
All righty, Ryan O'Connell, Senior Civil Engineer in Emerald Public Works. I'm here to talk about our SB1 project list for fiscal year 26-27. If this sounds like a repeat of last year, it is. So, I will skip actually to our discussion section up here. This is the ninth year that city has been receiving SB1 funding in this manner. This is SB1 gas tax, if you've heard the term. This is funding that is given to every California jurisdiction to repair and rehab streets. It is a percentage of the taxes that come from gas that everyone pays for. The fund comes in at an estimate of last year of $356,000. Next year, we are estimated to receive $377,000. The increase is due to cost of living adjustments, but also due to how our population has been increasing year over year. So we are, getting a little bit more of a bump than our neighbors due to how we've been housing goals and doing well in that regard. So it's been good and for our paving program, the better we do in our housing goals. Our pavement condition index is showing 78, a score of 78 out of 100 over a three-year moving average. That puts us as tied in Alameda County with the city of Dublin. So for a city on this side of the East Bay to be at that score, it's really good. So we're hoping to keep it at that that condition and even try to get it increased a little bit more with this bump in numbers every year over year. So last year, we were still paving our 2024-2025 project, which was the Hollis Street project, which was an extension of our Triangle Neighborhood paving project. So last year, we actually approved this same exact list that's shown before you. So we're just repeating that same list. The reason we approve this list every year is to we need to have these streets eligible for this funding at the state level. So when we get the funding in, we have to report what these funds are being used on. There's a lot of checks and balances, audits that happen with these funds. We need to show where these funds are being spent. We do an annual report saying these funds were spent on this street, and that's what we do. So we give them a kind of our two-year paving program is usually what we do, and that's what we have on this list. So we're going to go through this list real quick with you, and it's on a map, and we are just giving the same report as last year, and this is the list of streets that we'd like to pave in the next 2 years. And let's get to that list. So our next project that we are trying to do is on Adeline Street. It's getting a nickname called the Adeline Link Project. If you're out there at Bike to Work Day, we have a poster that will show the Adeline Link on there and kind of what we're doing. So we're trying to do a separated bikeway project on Adeline from 36th Street all the way up to 41st Street, connecting into some other Class 4 bikeway improvements that we did a few years back. We'll also try to be paving some of the side streets off of Adeline Street at the same time. So as we're mobilizing the one side of town, we'd like to try to piggyback onto that same project to other street areas. If we have enough funding in the paving program, we'd like to also try to do Emory Street and Peralta Street. So it's a combination of having enough funds in the program, but also getting favorable bid prices. So it'll depend on those two factors of if we can do these additional streets. The next street that we would try to do if those two factors are favorable is to try to do 67th Street at the top of the northerly city limits. Right now, there's a lot of potholes up there, one of our worst streets in the city. We'd like to get that right and try to repave that street. And then year two of our paving program, we'd like to try to do Christie Avenue and Frontage Road. That's the next big street section that we'd like to try to do. And if, again, the paving budget and favorable bid prices, we'd like to try to do 53rd Street and 54th Street right outside the ECCL. And that is basically what is on this table and list right here. So, and that is the list that we need to approve. Once it gets approved by the TSC, we would like to forward it to City Council for the ultimate approval. That approval, that resolution gets submitted to the state. That's a requirement of the funding for us to receive this funding every year. So if we don't complete this, we're not eligible to receive that funding.
Thank you,
Ryan.
Any questions?
Just so I understand, the everything that's the red bubbles on the map, that's what's eligible for to spend SB1 funding for.
Yes.
Obviously, we would probably avoid spending it on things that are kind of under development, right? So like we're not planning to repave Powell right now because it's not in bad shape. And also the loop is in good shape, so we probably hold off on those. So then does that mean we're allocating all the funding to the 2026 sustainable streetscapes, right?
26,
26, 26, 26, 26, 26, 26, 26, 26, 26, 26, 26, 26, 26, 26, 26, 26, 26, 26, 26, 26, 26, 26, 26, 26, 26, 26, 26, 26, 26, 26, 26, 26, 26, 26, 26, 26, 26, 26, 26, 26, 26, 26, 26, 26, 26, 26, 26, 26, 26, 26, 26, 26, 26, 26, 26, 26, 26, 26, 26, 26, 26, 26, 26, 26, 26, 26, 26, 26, 26, 26, 26, 26, 26, 26, 26, 26, 26, 26, 26, 26, 26, 26, 26, 26, 26, 26, 26, 26, 26, 26, 26, 26, 26, 26, 26, 26, 26, 26, 26, 26, 26, 26, 26, 26, 26, 26, 26, 26, 26, 26, 26, 26, 26, 26, 26, 26, 26, 26, 26, 26, 26, 26, 26, 26, Does that is there just perfect overlap with, I guess, on this map, where's the sustainable streetscapes? Does that cover everything else that's in the red bubbles?
So this is, if I can just like say it in a different way, I guess. Yeah. Like, so the RMRA funding is only one piece of our funding pie, you know, so it's only.
Sorry, let me rephrase my question.
Let me rephrase the question.
So we want to do 67th Street, right?
Yes, yes.
That's not part of our streetscapes, right, as far as I know?
Not at this time, but okay. Yeah, if we are able to get a favorable bid price, we could add it into the project as like a change order or something like that.
So I guess what I'm asking then is, since we want to do 67th Street, which, you know, generally sees a lot of traffic, I think that's where like Rivian is coming, right? Yeah. So it'd be nice that that's in better shape. If we allocate the money to sustainable streetscapes, you know, do without calling six, could we still do the things that we think we need to do outside of the streetscapes, or do we just call anything that we want to do as part of the streetscapes?
Like, the streetscapes is our paving program, you know, it's just all in one bucket. So
I see. Okay, maybe that's what I did. I wasn't sure if we, I wasn't sure if streetscapes like encapsulated like the some special projects like Adeline, for example, or if it's just really anything that we need to be paving.
Yeah, so back in 2023, when we approved the last capital improvement program, our annual pavement and rehab program got incorporated into our sustainable streetscapes program, and that's now it's an annual sustainable streetscapes program, which includes paving but also any other bike ped improvements, green infrastructure improvements. It's kind of just an all-in-one package, omnibus, if you will, you know.
Got it. Okay, no, I understand. That makes sense. One side question, has paving materials improved at all in the last few decades? Like, do we get more bang for the buck there, like where you can pave a street and instead of lasting 10 or 15 years, we can get 15 to 30? Like, are we on top of like the latest, you know, technology there?
Yeah, there's constantly some updates in that. There's a lot of recycled material being used in some of the paving materials. So there's both sides of that.
I mean, using recycled, I care more about spending our, you know, because it's a very expensive thing in general, be paving streets. And you can see how cities, I mean, Berkeley and Oakland are really struggling with the cost. Like, it's just a matter of they don't have the money to pave some of these streets. I'm just wondering if the technology improved, that would really free up money for, you know, other things that are in our operating costs.
Yeah, I say technology has improved, but the cost of construction has gone way up, like beating CPI by, you know, almost double. So even if it has improved, it's outweighed by just the increase to construction costs. So,
okay, but does that mean it lasts? I guess what it meant is it doesn't last longer.
There's been, I would say, up like even my career doing paving, you know, I've been paving since like 2011 when I first started as a civil engineer in a municipal agency. And like we used to, you know, pave streets every 5 to 7 years. We can really stretch stuff out to like, 10 years plus, you know.
Is that materials? What's the cost?
Materials and techniques. So, you know, there's lack of a better term, like band-aiding that you can do to streets.
I see.
To where you can throw a few band-aids on a street 3 to 5 times before you have to do a full repaving of the street.
Got it.
And you really extend the life of a street before you have to do the full big cost of a full repaving like we just did on Hollis Street.
Yeah,
the Hollis Street actually did get a few band-aids in its lifetime before it had that full repaving that it just got.
Okay.
And that's an example of one of those. And we've been doing a lot of band-aids around the city as far as slurry seals. And that's a very lower cost paving technique. And it spreads the dollar out a lot further and can last, you know, it used to be every, you know, you slurry every 3 years. Those slurries can now last, you know, 5 to 7 years. You can kind of stretch them out a little bit. So that's
okay. Yeah, that answers my question. It sounds like the technology is improving. Yeah. Thanks, Ren.
Yeah.
No other questions for me.
Thank you, Member Moore. Two questions, I guess. One, so just to clarify the, and I'm just going to use this as a chance to ask about sustainable streetscapes while we're here. So the Adeline link, did I hear correctly that that's hope the goal is for this year?
This upcoming fiscal year 26-27.
Okay, so by next July.
Probably. Yeah, I think we're slated most likely to bid it out this fall, starting construction in spring with the current schedule.
Okay, right now. Sounds good. And then when will I know the sustainable streetscapes is sort of an ongoing concern, I guess, depending on how quickly things go and all that. But will we be reviewing that, or when will we get an update, I guess, and when will that?
Yeah. If you remember, I think we saw like a 10% or 35% design of the Adeline concept.
I meant like the general sustainable streetscapes update.
Yes. Yeah, that will be coming through
Okay. Transportation
once it's ready later this summer.
Okay. Okay, great. I will close questions, open public comments. Any public comment in the room on item 5.3? Nope. Okay. Any online comment cards you haven't seen yet? I don't think so.
No.
Okay. Any discussion on this item?
No discussion. I'll make a motion to approve the recommendation.
Okay. I will second that.
Okay. Chair Matheson?
Aye.
And Member David Moore?
Aye.
Motion passes.
Excellent. And then I think we will move to item 6.1. Are you doing this as well?
And this will be Mike Roberts, who is online.
Oh, great.
And he's feeling a little under the weather, so we save you guys the sickness.
Thank you.
And Mike, can you test your mic?
Yes. Hello.
There you go. All right, you're good to go.
All right. Thank you. Hi, this is Mike Roberts, Senior Civil Engineer with Public Works Department, and reporting out to you for a project update on the Emeryville Parks Project program that we've got going on. With me today, we've got Spence Kaler and Crystal Ireno Garibay with PlaceWorks Design Team. They're our subject matter experts. If you have real technical questions, they will probably go to those folks who design parks on a regular basis. So I feel like there is a bit of material to get through. So we've kind of organized this presentation in two parts. One is the park rehabilitation section, which is four parks that we are rehabilitating. We'll go through that in an overview and hopefully get questions and comments from you then, and then get into the new playground that we're planning out at the marina, and get into kind of a different type of question and comment from you all. So how we got here. So back in June of 2023, the Parks Project was adopted by the council as part of the June 2023 Capital Improvement Program. In October 24, Community Services distributed a citywide park survey, and we had really good responses on that. We had 278 respondents chime in on what they thought was the condition of our parks and what our parks lacked. Then in May 2025, the results of that survey was presented to the Parks and Rec Committee. And soon thereafter, we started, we completed the hiring process for a consultant to help us vision, you know, concept design and ultimately design a parks program. So, yeah, just last week, May 2026, we took some of the concepts to the Parks and Rec Committee and had them weigh in on various elements, very specific elements that they might be interested in. And then today we have it in front of you for comment. So the parks included in the project are Temescal, Stanford, 61st Mini Park, Dole Hollis Park, and Marina Park. And like I said before, the top four in this list are really park rehabs, where we're kind of attending to the most urgent needs in those parks. And the Marina Park improvement is a brand new playground. So for Temescal Creek Park, the top priorities in the city survey were both fairly basic. There was need for picnic table replacements and benches. If you've been out there, yeah, the picnic tables are in pretty bad condition, and we thought that maybe there could be another one added out by the basketball court. So you see the yellow dots on the image in front of you. Those are proposed new picnic tables, the one, the rightmost one being a new one. And then for benches, there's thought of adding four additional benches to attend to that need as described through the survey. So as far as what those items look like, we've got concrete picnic table that is ADA compliant. It pretty much matches what's out there now, that's been out there, you know, 20 plus years and, you know, has seen better days, but it does fit the replacement does fit the space that's out there. So that's why that was chosen. And it's kind of a city standard. Same with the bench. These are city standard benches that are made out of recycled plastic and are have been being installed as replacement benches throughout the city. And then moving on to Stanford Avenue Park, results of the survey indicated the desire to have a replaced hydration station or drinking fountain. Also, they wanted the survey came back wanting a replacement of the picnic tables that were out there. So that is included in the scope of the project to replace those tables and get a new drinking fountain. Also, there's been a talk of enclosing the entire park a little better for children's safety, to keep them, you know, within the confines of the park, and adding some additional chain link fence, which you can see in the pink. The idea is to have four gates, two on each end, two on the Vallejo Street side and two on the Beaudry Street side, to allow access into the park. But while also, you know, kind of corralling the little ones. And then during our site visit to the park, we noticed that some of the tree roots out there were lifting pavement. So to make it ADA accessible, we are going to be removing and replacing a small amount of concrete out there, about 190 square feet. The elements that will be installed there are this hydration station you may be familiar with. It's got a bottle refiller and two levels of water fountain to drink from, one that is ADA compliant and, you know, helpful for child age kids, young people, and then an adult level one. Proposing the same picnic table as Temescal Creek to kind of keep a uniformity in our inventory. And then black chain link fence, as is currently out there, to complete the surrounding of the park. And then standard concrete to do the ADA path repairs. Next up, we had the 61st Street Mini Park. The top priorities via the survey were to provide a new element that had inclusive play. Inclusive play is both play that includes mobility challenge folks and kind of intergenerational play, meaning, you know, where adults or maybe grandparents can interact with children at the same kind of play location. So that was a indicated top need from the survey. A new bench was requested and promptly installed by Phil Tosht and team. Thank you, Phil. And then bike parking was considered a priority. We took a close look at it. There is adequate parking there. There's four spaces out there and maybe enough to get a cargo bike in there, though maneuvering in that tight spot is going to be a challenge. It might be best that a cargo bike or a very large bike be locked outside, just by the constraints of the geometry of the park. Optional items that weren't on their survey was, you know, we've noticed over the years that a lot of people donate toys to the park and it becomes a little bit cluttered. So there's currently a toy parking zone. We were thinking about maybe really defining that area and really kind of promoting that as a place to return toys once they're finished. This is an image of what it could be for the toy parking zone. The feedback we got from the Parks and Rec Committee was that they would prefer it not to have maybe a vehicle-related theme, but maybe a nautical boat parking type theme. That was their preference, and that seems like some reasonable thing we can accommodate. Yeah. So as far as the inclusive play element shown here in yellow in the center of the park between the swing set and the play system, the Parks and Rec Committee was given kind of a choice of three items to rank the three in order of preference. And they chose the playhouse, the item to the right, but with a strong recommendation that it be made out of natural materials. This one indicated in the image is wood that is covered with a plastic. They would prefer that it is entirely out of wood. We will do our best to accommodate that, you know, given budget and availability of such a system. Second choice was a musical instrument station with three musical instruments. There was concern, conversation about the maintainability of such a thing and, you know, the vandalism that could occur to, you know, drumsticks secured by a wire. And then the table and wall panel structure rated third of the three. Okay, on to Doyle Hollis Park. The top city survey requests were shade at the picnic tables. There was a request to replace some of the play structures out there and also new safety surfacing. Over the years, the safety surfacing's gotten old. This park's about 15 years old, so the equipment is starting to age a bit. Safety surfacing is, you know, maybe you're already familiar with it, but it's a resilient rubberized surfacing. A comment from the Parks and Rec Committee was to use colors that were that would least increase the heat island effect. So I believe that would be lighter colors involved in doing that. So the design team will take that request back and try to accommodate. So as far as the shade elements that the Parks and Rec Committee sort of voted and ranked on, they were given the choice of a metal frame with perforated metal roof, kind of a metal frame with a solid roof, and then a redwood pergola. And it seemed the redwood pergola ranked the highest, with the metal frame and perforated roof coming in second. What they just like the natural materials used with the redwood pergola. There was a request for vines to be grown on the pergola. You know, there isn't really any landscaping planned for this project. You know, I think we could look into a long-term landscaping revision to Dollhouse Park that did include vines. The challenge with vines on a pergola where people might be eating or playing is it takes a higher level of maintenance than vines, say, on a fence or on, you know, some vertical element that wasn't hanging over folks. So maybe you're looking at trimming back and deadheading vines on this pergola, you know, on a monthly basis than cutting back vines on a vertical element, you know, once a year or so. Benefit of the metal frame is that it only had one stanchion that could cover two picnic areas, and that was attractive too. But the redwood pergola was the favored shade material for Dollhouse Park. Moving on to the preferred play structure, since may not have been clear, but with where the playground equipment sits today, there are two pieces to the northeast in the rubber within the rubberized surfacing. They're smaller piece, small and medium sized pieces, a little bit run down and maybe not as used as much as the main signature piece with the slide, which gets a lot of use. So replacements for those two pieces, the Parks and Rec Committee was given a choice of five, and they landed on the Evos as their first preference, Netplex their second, and Geoplex Navigator their third. The Evos, I'll come down to the Evos, looks something like this. It's three arches, sort of artistic in a sense. It's got kind of plastic hoops that you can move through and a netting that you can climb on. And I believe there are different configurations that can be added to it added to it to make it interesting. So this is the Evos Arch. Rearch was their number one choice. Their number two was the Netplex 14 posts. Didn't quite get the preference of a lot of people because it kind of quite resembles what already exists over at the park. A lot of kind of redundant features over the existing main structure at the park. So. Just to follow up with, you know, to summarize the public comment that we received at the Parks and Rec Committee on these four parks, you know, there was a desire to rewild where we could and use natural materials as much as possible. And there was a consistent theme that folks would like nature play as often as possible, and that lighting and safety was very important to the folks that attended the Parks and Rec Committee meeting. The committee itself was you know, interested in maximizing safety and making sure that lighting was present was working properly. They're interested in using natural materials when we can, and wanted armrests on benches so that older folks that needed that additional assistance to get up and down from the seat would have it. And they were interested in high durability and low maintenance of the elements we select. So at this point, I'd like to pause and maybe take any questions or comments from you all on these four parks, kind of the rehabilitation of parks before we get into, you know, the making of a new playground.
Thanks, Mike. Point of clarification, can we take public comment twice in an item? That's what I thought.
I think it's up to you.
Okay. All right. So we'll go questions, couple comment, discussion, mm-hmm. and then we'll go back to me.
Any clarifying questions for Mike on the four parts?
One question. I know, so we have the new bench in the mini park. I previously asked why we can't have two benches side by side, and I was told that that might block a cargo bike in one of the bike spots, but it sounds like the cargo bikes are already somewhat infeasible in those bike spots. So it kind of reopens. And I'm actually somebody who brought a bike with a trailer to that park for the last 8 years, and I always parked somewhere else. I never actually parked there. So I'm wondering, could we consider an additional bench side by side with that other bench? It looked like the area would fit it just fine. So I wanted staff's thoughts on that.
Yeah, I think we could definitely look into that and see if, yeah, since we're not really hearing the call for cargo bike parking there anymore, to add another bench. Nick, you're saying next to the one that's recently been installed?
Yeah, right. Just, you can imagine them just like side by side. You know, some areas in parks, you just have like two benches. It's like additional seating, gives people space to space out. The other question I had, the chain link fence on Stanford Street, is there a budget aspect to some of this? Like, you know, how much is that chain link fence? Is there any downside cost-wise to having that there? Is it, how necessary is it? I assume it's been assessed by our consultants. Is this like a necessary thing at Stanford Park? Like, is that a park that, you know, it's intended, are you expecting like, you know, the 3-year-olds who we think are gonna like wander out into the neighboring streets? Is that the rationale for it?
I think that is the rationale. Yeah, there's concern that the little ones would, yeah, go out onto the street or leave the park.
Okay. So that's like a must have, is that right? Like that's a...
Yes, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And then in terms of cost, what's the Redwood Bodega thing? Or what was it, the Redwood...
Pergola.
Sorry. Is that one, and I guess that might have vines on it eventually, perhaps? Is that the idea?
It could. We see the issues that the vines might present. We have them at Joseph Emery Park, and it's becomes a maintenance issue. So
I think there's like a landscaping concern.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
What's the cost difference between the redwood pergola and the metal frame with perforated metal roof?
Don't have that immediately in front of me. Let's see.
I can answer that for you, Mike, if you'd like.
Okay, thank you, yeah.
Sure, yeah, the redwood pergola is probably half the cost of the metal frame.
Okay. Yeah, that's how kind of what I think the theme of some of my questions are going to be, you know, given these choices that we presented, and, you know, if the Parks Committee selected one, but if it's, you know, if that one is much more expensive than a suitable alternative, I think I would like to know that. But it's, if they selected the one that in this case is half the price of something that seems, you know, equally well suited, then I think it makes sense to go with the one. And kind of in that vein, I was wondering about that co-op, or what was it, the additional play structure at the mini park, where there was a request for like natural materials. Like, what does a all wood version of a playhouse look like? Or have we not like really researched what that space looks like yet? But like for example, this playhouse number one that's selected, yeah. There was a request to make that you know, all natural, but like what would be the, do we know the cost of that change possibly?
I think we're, you know, Spence can speak to this more accurately, but I think we're fairly confident we can, I think there was a desire to at the very least replicate natural appearance. And I think we for sure can do that within the same kind of price range. To actually use natural materials, I think that, you know, we need to research that a little deeper.
Okay. Yeah, and that's what I meant, like replicate. I mean, if you think about where this thing is going, it's not like in a wildernessy area. It's going on a, you know, spot of concrete, right? So, you know, we're not going to have like a full natural play area there. You know, if you want all natural, but my kids sometimes just run into the bushes off to the side and I don't see them for an hour. The last question I had was on the, could you go back to the play structure replacement at the Doyle Hollis Park? So there was, I know there's like a kind of a spinny thing that kids would like kind of run on and it spins. It's kind of like a collaborative play thing. Can you go back to the map overview of like the location that we're looking at? Yeah, right yeah. There. So you said replace two elements with one new element. Was there any comment from Parks about the, I know like the mechanism of that machine is kind of ground down over time and maybe it doesn't spin as well, which is maybe why people don't play on it as much. But was there any discussion about, you know, because I feel like we're going to be missing something that was, this was like a collaborative spinning thing that now is going to a stationary structure. Did the Parks Committee make any comment on that, or did they just immediately jump into the options?
Yeah, I don't think I heard any comment about, you know, their preference for what was existing there, or yeah, you know, okay. They just, you know.
And then going back to this, what was it called? The Evos 3?
Yes.
Or what was the name of the structure?
Yeah, the Evos 3 arch.
Yeah, what exactly is going on there? Or like, I know it kind of looks cool, and I'm just hoping it's as like fun as it looks artistic. Did they do like a deep dive at Parks? Like, did they just look at the same slide that we're looking at right now to make their decision?
I think they looked at the same slide. Yeah. Yep.
Okay, or maybe I guess somebody could always go online, and if I looked up Evos 3 arch, I could read more about this thing.
So actually, yeah, this has a link within it now. Spence, maybe you could speak to what options within the 3 arch there are, or that's kind of to be determined. I think maybe you can do different things with it, different types of climbing. Like we're seeing here.
Yeah, there are a few different configurations of how many large hoops there are. And then within that, these net webs and hanging hoops to climb through. And This is a starting point meant to be like an understanding what type of equipment the city is interested in, and we can refine these sort of add-ons. This with the side ramps and tubes, that's more than I was expecting to see here, but I don't know if, I think those are supplemental pieces, but we have a budget that we're working within, and if we can include additional pieces that are part of this play scheme, landscape structures, that's still very much on the table.
But we were looking at equipment that will complement the existing large piece of equipment that will stay, and things that will provide different types of play than are given at the current one.
What was your thinking, given that we had that structure that was like a big wheel that like multiple kids could get on and kind of spin and they kind of play off of each other's? I've seen very interesting interactions on that back when it was more functional. I guess, do you have any thoughts on moving entirely away from that? Or could something like that still be accommodated in conjunction? Like, is there enough room for the Evos 3 arch and improved ball bearings on that? Or a new, spinning collaborative structure, right? We could have more than one kid on there. Like, I think about San Pablo Park. It's very common to see a bunch of kids kind of get together on this like kind of spinning thing. It's much more compact. I don't know if you looked at San Pablo Park, but they have one. Like, I've seen like six kids kind of hanging off this thing, spinning. What I'm hesitant to do is like take away that element of play that existed and move to something that is. Yeah, this seems like maybe a suitable replacement for that that middle structure that's already there.
Yeah, fairly close.
But then we still lose something with the. I'm just wondering if footprint wise, could we fit, say, something like the San Pablo Park one or some variation of what's just maybe an improved version of what was there with that that wheel?
Yeah, we can definitely look into doing that. If any of these pieces have a pretty large fall zone outside them, and so part of this was our team at the city interested in seeing what one larger piece could replace those two smaller ones. Mm-hmm. And so there are smaller versions of the Evos that maybe that would have a footprint that could fill the gap, though honestly, it's kind of similar to what's there, so we would need to talk about whether that was worth replacing outright. We can also talk about repairs to that that rotating one, because I know that's a really popular one at a lot of playgrounds.
Yeah, that's kind of, because I do feel like what's there is not really, this is not too different from what's there. It's kind of like a weird artistic thing that you can kind of climb some parts of it. And I feel like that description would apply to the thing that's already there. But then we also would be losing this structure that I've seen get a lot of use over the years before the mechanism kind of got gunked up. So yeah, I'm just kind of, was there any discussion of that on the Parks Committee, or did they just kind of, look at their five options and pick the best one?
Yeah, I think they were just mostly guided by the survey requesting replacement of some of the equipment here. And as far as the five, how they came to that one, I think they were trying to avoid large amounts of plastic. This seems, a match for what's adjacent, but maybe too much of a match, too similar. I think they wanted something that was climbable, and that's how they landed on this.
Okay, thanks for that info. Those are my questions.
Okay, thank you. Just one clarification. At Stanford Park, I know that we are in the very early stages of redeveloping into a park, the Boyd's Auto Body Shop, which I think is just north of the Stanford Park.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I'm assuming that is sufficiently far away that all these replacements we'd want them to happen in the meantime, and then perhaps additional changes when that development happens.
Yeah, from my understanding of that project, yeah, these are all complementary to that. There's talk of maybe a street closure and something future in the Boyd's location. But
that's partially because some of those chain link fences may not be, as necessary if one of the streets were closed or substantially slowed to traffic. But that's, I think, far enough away as to not make a substantive difference in this. I don't think I have any other clarifying questions. So let's move to public comment for the first half of item 6.1 for the four parks, non-marina parks. Phil, do we have any online comment cards for this? I don't think we do, but okay. Any comments in the room? Hello.
I would love to comment. Yes. Hi, I'm Andy Eggers. I'm the chair of Parks and Rec. So many things to say, it's a little time, but basically, as far as the fence goes, that was predetermined that it was necessary. That wasn't part of the survey. So I'm not sure that what happened before I even was a member. I've been there for 2 years. So I don't know why, but I'm not a fan of it because it cuts off pedestrian access through the park. Mm-hmm. However, I do get the concern for little kids. So I think we're working on a solution for that. But in the meantime, I do think it might be necessary. As far as the play structure goes that spins around, we weren't even given the choice to keep it. I was under the impression, and I can't remember exactly how I got this, it was too dangerous to keep, that a lot of injuries were happening.
Oh.
And I agree with you. One of my best memories of growing up was on a structure that was more flat, but it tilted, and a lot of kids got on and pushed it around, and you got really dizzy and fell off. And I love it. So I think kudos to you for bringing that up, and maybe we can look at, it does seem like the other structure is a little too similar to it, and maybe doesn't do a collaborative play. However, we were also thinking about ADA accessible play there and keeping it in the age range, I believe, of 5 to 12. Is that right, Spence?
Yeah, right.
So that was, unfortunately, I think the committee was not given, we were told everything was within budget and we were to vote for one of the choices and or the choices to rank them how we like them. Mm. Not that that's what's happening. It's just that they wanted our feedback or input on what they had selected. So we were kind of not as insular on the process as you might think. So, but anyway, I think there are some good choices. Unfortunately, we can't. I think budget makes a lot of the other choices not good. As far as the bike rack and the mini park goes, I don't think we need it inside. I think we need it outside of the, and it would take care of the oversized bikes and it wouldn't get in the way of the kids as long as you could lock it up. It seems like outside adding, because I know there's a lot of places where bike racks would be nice, so you wouldn't have to walk across the street to park your bike. There's probably other things, but yeah, I think, can you read my own writing? Yeah, I think that's basically it, but Mike, you did an excellent job of summarizing the 3.5-hour meeting, so kudos to you.
Thank you so much.
Appreciate it. Any other public comments inside?
Okay.
Any other discussion on the first half of 6.1?
So I just wanted to maybe just going back to the play structure, if it could be a bit more thoughtful about like the, if we're losing a collaborative play opportunity there and not really gaining anything new, I'd like to encourage staff to revisit what can be done there. If there is a true safety concern with the spinning structure, sometimes like there is a little bit of risk at parks, right? Like it is possible maybe that's part of the appeal to kids is there's higher stakes maybe if you fall off the spinning structure at speed. But perhaps we want to have enough sufficient fall zone where, if you fall, you don't get, injured badly. I'd be curious to know if there's like a more modern, spinning collaborative play structure, or maybe something like we've seen at San Pablo Park, That could be a nice attraction there. So yeah, maybe there's some more options that could be presented to the Parks Committee for consideration. So that's just some thought and feedback.
Makes sense. I agree. You know, to the extent that we can promote some kind of collaboration. I'm sure kids on normal play structures will play with each other as well. But just two additional thoughts. One is in the mini park. I think that you are already thinking about this, but just I know that the area where that third between the swings and the current play structure, I often see kids sort of walking around with their little toys on wheels that are in that area. So just making sure that there's sufficient space for kids to wander in that space. Although it looked like the option that you suggested sort of would accommodate that. And then at the Doyle Hollis Park across the street, one of the thought, and I I'm guessing the question would be how much do you want to pay for it, but I was just thinking about it at Christie Park, which has the whale structure, and I think has I don't know, I would defer to people who know more about parks than me about whether that's it's very eye-catching and distinctive. I don't know if it's as good of a play structure as other play structures, but I think having some kind of, using natural elements, and also, to the extent that we can have play structures which, evoke nature, I think is a nice complement to that. So it doesn't have to be, I don't want to spend, a ton of money doing that, but I think it, would help make it kind of more distinctive and match the aesthetic vibe of some of our other parks as well. So I'm not sure exactly what that looks like, but if that's something that the Parks and Rec Committee was interested in, I think would be intriguing in this space as well, since we might have space for a little bit of a larger play structure. So those are my only two comments. So Mike, maybe I'll pass back.
If I could, the toy storage zone, what's the thinking behind that? Because we already have a partition. There's something painted that says put your toys here. What are we trying to gain with a more fun design?
Yeah, I think just building on that, and maybe it would get used a little more if it was more attractive or more entertaining.
Oh yeah, I'm skeptical of that, but I'd say save the money, use it for something else. I mean, it's already boxed and it says toy storage area. It seems like it's already enough of a lift to try to get people to put stuff in there. I'd even be worried that people might be concerned about blocking the roadway here, right? Like the toy track, so yeah, I'm not sure that we would get compliance with something like that. Just okay. That voicing, yeah. Some skepticism, yeah.
Understood. Thank you for that. Okay, shall I move on to the marina?
Yes, please.
Thank you. The marina park. So yeah, we've
Mike, before you before you keep going, I do have one more question on the first four. Okay. What is the timeline of implementation on those?
So I think ideally, and things could change depending on budget constraints and feedback, but I think the idea is to package all five locations together as one project, and maybe hopefully we're out in construction within a year, I'd say is the hope. Out at the marina here, we can talk about it, but there will be interaction with BCDC, and whether it's in administratively secured permit or needs to go to commission will affect the schedule, as you can imagine. So
thank you.
Yeah. So the Mariner Park, we're talking about siting a new playground at the very western end of Powell Street in the Mariner Park. As you can see where the pink and yellow dots are here, it's a semicircular area today, well accessed by pedestrian pathways, has adjacent parking, and has wonderful sweeping views of the bay. Folks that commented on the survey about what they might like to see in Marina Park are, you know, a water fountain hydration system station. They would like to see nature play incorporated into a new playground, and they would like to see increased shade out at the park. As you know, Matt Anderson has done a great job of planting 100 trees out at the Marina Park. And so that portion of the work is complete, you know, pending growth of the trees. So this is a little bit of a closer up of the site we had in mind. There is some natural tree shade from the south. And it is somewhat encircled by pathways. The areas on this plan that we're going to be focused on are area A, B, and C, where the main playground equipment is located. Those pieces of equipment will be supplemented by smaller items such as rock clusters and log pieces, picnic tables, and benches. So here's kind of an isometric of the areas. This would be area A with a slide system as a placeholder. Area B here is with this kind of crow's nest play system, and area C here with a log climber. These two lights exist already. They're not part of the project, but we'll buy a nice light. Okay, so starting with area A, which is, let's see, the southwest corner of the site, intended for younger age children, and the separation between the younger play areas and the older is this concrete or decomposed granite pathway that will be constructed. Let's see, the items within that area, or the, I guess, signature item within that area that the Parks and Rec Committee saw were a slide platform, a rustic climbing frame, and a boat. And the boat won a lot of hearts over. You know, it's maybe a little less of a kinetic play item, but more of a kind of... you know, imaginative play type structure for younger kids, but with enough activity going on that they really enjoyed it because of its nautical theme and fitting into the marina location. Marina Park location B, which is highlighted here, the Parks and Rec Committee was given three options there: mass climbing frame, bird nest swing, and a log climbing frame. The log climbing frame came in as a favorite, and then the bird's nest swing was a second favorite there. The thought with the log climbing frame was that it gave a lot of variation to the type of play and climbing that could go on there. Also kind of gave you that bird's eye view or the crow's nest view of the bay and the Golden Gate Bridge. So it kind of has a lot more going on perhaps than the others too. The other two pieces. Then let's see, Marina Park location C, where the log pile is shown. The Parks and Rec Committee was given a choice of log pile, Mount Vernon, or the log stack. The log stack was chosen as a preference with the kind of caveat that the bird's nest swing is if allowed to mix and match, they would prefer to see the bird nest swing to be installed here. So those were their main three preferences for the kind of signature items within the park. And then we walked them through some options, you know, to kind of prioritize or rank the kind of fill-in options around the park that would kind of supplement those three main items. Log rounds, boulders, stepping clusters, and tunnels. The boulders were really preferred because they gave a kind of a contrasting material and complementary at the same time, and kind of enhanced the sense of nature play that was very that the Parks and Rec Committee was very much interested in. They also loved the log tunnel concept as a second item, stepping clusters third, and then log rounds fourth. As you can imagine, to kind of lay out this park moving forward, it's going to be a bit of a matrix with budget and elements. So I imagine several of these elements are going to be used to varying degrees once we get rolling with design. The furnishings within the park are going to be similar to what you've seen throughout the city: hydration station, or city standard bike rack, and city standard trash receptacle. Moving on to seating options, they were given a choice of three: the arbor, bench 51, and log bench. Though everyone liked the cuteness of the log bench, a lot of folks understood that it might not be the most comfortable option, and bench 51 was a high preference. They did specify that they'd like an armrest there to enable people to get up and down. The arbor bench was I'd describe it as a distant second. It's a bit more modern and didn't maybe fit in with the feel of the overall playground theme, was the sense. On to fencing options. They were shown four different types of fence: a tubular steel fence, wood picket fence, horizontal log fence, and recycled composite wood fence, recycled plastic, basically. First preference was a horizontal log fence. They like that it gave kind of the horizontal view into the park. So, maybe someone could be outside of the park and, keep an eye on their children. Second was the tubular steel fence. I think there was some concern and appreciation for longevity and maintainability of fencing, which isn't kind of a direct used element of the playground for play, but nonetheless very, very important for safety and keeping the little ones corralled. So yeah, order of preference was horizontal log fence, tubular steel fence, wooden picket fence, and then the composite wood fence. This is a element of the park that, probably we would want the flexibility of maybe, let's say, the top three choices here to make budget work for the main elements of the playground. Moving down to picnic table options, given a choice of the greenway, which is more like a city standard picnic table, but made out of wood and steel, an accessible oak picnic table, and then wood logs. Folks thought the wood logs fit in fine with the nature play theme, but didn't really think the comfort would be there. Accessible oak, I think they kind of wisely again saw that maybe there would be a longer term maintenance and a cost issue. Quite beautiful, but maybe not appropriate for the kind of conditions and setting that the park's at. And so the greenway went out, let's say, quite strongly as being their preference. So that is it for the quick overview of what the Parks and Rec Committee saw. Please feel free to ask questions, provide comment.
You, Mike. Any questions?
Just one question. Mike, you mentioned the something about the budget working out if we, for the fencing options, you said the top three are which ones? What was the budget concern there?
Statement. You know, we're looking at this new playground as a project with kind of a fixed budget, and to work in the primary play elements that are kind of preferred, the fencing choice may have to we may go lower on the preference for the fencing depending on cost. Might not get the first preference is what I'm saying. Maybe not the second. Maybe we're dipping down to the third in order to get the top preference for play equipment.
I see. So it's the trade-off between the horizontal log fence sounds like that's the most expensive one. And
it is.
Yeah. And there might need to be some prioritization and trade-offs that need to be considered.
Yeah.
Speaking of trade-offs, possibly going back to the benches, what happened to our city standard bench, which kind of looks like the middle one, but with armrests? Wouldn't it not be cheaper just to go with our city standard? I know it's not as attractive with the wood looking material versus this one. Why was that not presented as an option?
I think just trying to keep within the theme of natural materials as much as possible, really.
I see. Okay, that's helpful. I guess when it comes down to trade-offs, if somebody wanted could using our normal bench, enable that nice horizontal wood fence, perhaps, or are those just different orders of magnitude and cost?
My sense is there's a magnitude, but yeah, we'll definitely, try to keep all the top options in play. I think it's pretty much a custom fence. Yeah.
One last question on the topic of budget. As kind of the things get better sorted with the other play structures, the other parks, the fencing options for Stanford Park, how do we plan, how do we plan on approaching trade-offs, right? Like, say there's I would love to see at this park that the log climbing structure and the bird's nest swing. But I would hate to be told that that means that, Doyle Hollis Park doesn't get, a decent replacement play structure there, right? So maybe as we're anticipating trade-offs and thinking about additional funds, I just wanted to know, one, how are we thinking about that? And then two, the Stanford fence, I'm wondering if that could actually become part of the expansion of that park project, right? It's a bit longer term. I know that park has been that way for a number of years, but we are, simultaneously planning a massive expansion of that park.
Yeah, I mean, that is something, a long-term strategy to consider. As far as budget, just to be clear, so the marina playground improvements are proposed to be funded from the marina fund. So separate monies are going to be used for the four rehabilitation projects. So.
Got it. That's helpful to know.
Any other questions?
That's it. Thank you.
Okay. Just one question for me. I know this is. I know that the Commission on Aging has discussed a memorial park. I'm going to call it. I'm not quite sure if that's the right word. In a similar area to the marina park, I think maybe right next to it. I don't know if that's if that's a real, if that's a discussion or, and I guess maybe my question is that, do you know, do you have an update on that? And was that part of the discussion here at all? I think that those two things could coexist, but.
Yeah, we don't have anything for you here today on that. There has been conversation about that. I think we all need to get a better sense of what is desired from the Commission on Aging. And yeah, it certainly makes sense to, you know, potentially slide that project in with this. Yep.
Well, sounds good. Yeah, I guess maybe it might make sense. I don't, you know, just especially to the extent that, you know, grandparents are bringing young kids to parks, or just older people are having kids, useful to maybe get the Commission on Aging's input as well, to the extent that they haven't chimed in on this. Okay, any public comments on this item? Go for it, Andy.
Sorry, comment. Well, just quickly to answer your questions about the natural elements, and, you know, we were not told about, I guess, the public comments from the public at our meeting where it was more natural is better, and in general I agree, but I also agree with your comment that it's going to be on concrete, so maybe sometimes natural is not the way to go. This is not this park, but the whale structure, and using, I love the whale structure, it's one of my favorite parks. However, I talked to little kids, they think it's kind of boring, and I think there's the slide is too small and all these things, and I think there is problems with maintenance of it, and also with people camping on the inside. Mm-hmm. So I was talking about to Rebecca about that, because I would like to see something more like that at this area. Okay, moving on, the toy track. Basically, I believe the toy track is necessary for to pass the park. When the advisors come and tell you what's possible for the city, what you have to have certain surfaces and certain clearances and things. I think that was part of the reason that we needed that, is that
it's more like insurance requirement,
right, to have that designated area to keep the toys away, otherwise the toys have to leave the park because they're kind of in the way and could be hazardous. So I think we were trying to make that more like fun to do, so it might get done and we wouldn't get in insurance issues. Mm-hmm. Okay. As far as the marina park goes, love all the options, and I would like to see this scene as well. I feel like there are so many things we could do here, and budget obviously is going to be the driving force. I'm a little concerned about some of the safety of the fences, of keeping kids out of that horizontal fence. It's going to be a climbing fence. I don't think that's a great idea, but I do love it. Oh my gosh. I think too, some of the concerns here were the southwest side of the park is included for intended for tots, and the other side is intended for older children. And so we had to choose some structures that kind of fit into that. But the boat, it is very cute with less active play, but we were told that we maybe could include some of the more optional elements to make that side more active and fun, that kind of spice it up. So I like that. And as far as the fencing goes, we were really worried about the wind. So the picket fence, we kind of recognize is very iconic to Northern California and some of the state parks, but we didn't know how the longevity of that would go. So we were trying to size that up. Yeah, I guess that's probably it, because sometimes cuteness is not the best way to go.
Uh-huh. Okay, any other public comments? Okay, move to discussion. Discussion thoughts.
I probably provided a lot of my thoughts in my questions, so I don't have too much to add, except maybe I would like to drill into the how we satisfy that insurance requirement for the toy storage at the mini park. Cause I do know it's kind of a really cool community phenomenon that like kind of large oversized toys get placed there. And I've seen them, it gives that park a lot of revisit value to a lot of kids, cause there's always something new there. I like the, you know, one kid's trash is another kid's treasure sort of phenomenon. But I also don't want us to run afoul of our of the insurance costs for that park. So I'd say whatever satisfies that requirement, I would be happy with. If the insurer says, you know, that the painted white lines that say toy storage helps get us there, you know, that's fine. But, you know, if they're also trying to see some level of compliance and they want to see us trying a bit harder, then, you know, I guess whatever it takes. So I'm interested in whatever it takes to check that box. But I don't, I'm just cautioning against going overboard. The, you know, the appeal of that park is the toys and the play structure, not whatever we paint on the ground in that space. So that's, I just wanted to caution against that. And to better understand that, I maybe Rebecca Sermanos, the kind of the subject matter expert, because she's the one who told me about the insurance requirements, which was not something that was on my radar previously.
Yeah. You know, I think to the extent that we can add a little bit of whimsy, I guess, at low cost if it's just paint, but certainly hearing you, Mike, and I appreciate your consideration of the trade-offs between all of the different features that we're trying to add. And I think that it's great that we're, you know, addressing all of this at once in one project, probably, you know, substantially cheaper overall, but that, you know, allows us to be more thoughtful about who's using the spaces, but also makes the trade-offs a bit more clear. But yeah, I think I just, you know, just on this one, I think this is really exciting, and I like the focus on the sort of natural inspired elements, and perhaps the boat is a good way to make the park a little bit more distinctive, you know, more whale-like, but more interesting. Better replay value than the whale. I don't know that I have any specific input beyond. I appreciate seeing this and the consideration and the Parks and Rec Committee's input and the public's input on all the survey responses. We'll leave my thoughts there. Anything else you need from us, Mike?
No, I'll just maybe speak to next steps. So we'll you know, churn through all the comments and kind of budget considerations and probably come up with a certain percent design, maybe low 30s, and then from that, it's something we would need, especially with the marina project. We would need to submit to BCDC to get an understanding of where we're going to be as far as their permitting structure, whether it will be administrative or not. If that has to go to commission, then you know, we're talking about a 6-month process. Once we have knowledge of where we're at with BCDC, then we can maybe come back to Parks and Rec with you know, this fleshed out a little more, and then back to you all for maybe a bit of a final approval.
Sounds good to me. Thank you. Appreciate that.
Thank you.
Excellent. Well, thank you, Mike, for your time, and thank you both for being here. So I'm going to close 6.1 and move to 6.2, bike tour, but I update Matt.
All right. And realizing now that I had all this time and I didn't even join the meeting. So I'm just going to do this verbally, despite all these beautiful graphics I made. I'm going to keep it short. Bike tour every day is this Thursday. I hope you all are getting excited about it because it's going to be awesome. We have 5 stations again this year, including the high school, have standard activities, including 2 smoothie stations, 1 bike art station. There'll be hopefully bubbles, if you can get that going, TBD on that. Food, drink, there'll be a bike mount at the 66 and Greenway, and the stamp passport program that was very popular. Okay, I am going to actually work on getting this set up because there were some great submissions by students at the school for stickers this year. I do want to share those. But for giveaways, standard fare, we added reflective vests as a giveaway for the passport program to add along with other safety bells and lights. We are upgrading our outreach this year. So we're doing our one poster that's all the projects in Emeryville that are ongoing or upcoming. We're doing another poster that is specifically on the loop and just bringing the concept to the public, what it might look like. Here's what's been going on. And then we're doing a third poster on the speed limit changes around Emeryville. So people are aware of that and what's happening. And you learned a little bit more about that today. So that was my speed run through Bike to Wherever Day.
Initiative.
And yeah, if you have any questions, you have to answer that.
What time is Bike to Wherever then?
It is 7 a.m. to 10 a.m. on Thursday. You want to go to, yeah, that one. Yeah.
I want to ask what age that is. Very
they're collectible. Yeah, so that is going to be all sorts of fun. And if there's anything else, let me know.
Sounds good. Any questions?
Looking forward to it. Thanks, Matt.
Likewise. Any public comment on this item? Thank you, Matt. Appreciate it. Appreciate it. Look forward to seeing you. Which station will you be at?
I have found out that it's good to have people floating in case of emergencies. All right. So I'll be at 66 in Greenway and then also floating around in case anything needs to be moved.
You said there's a bike rack at 66?
Yeah. So ACTC has a practice bus bike rack mount. So you don't have the pressure of people in the bus like waiting for you. You can practice putting your bike on the mount and then putting it on the rack and then mounting it and then taking it off. So when you get up there, you'll be a pro in real life. So kids love to do it. As an adult, it's actually pretty intimidating. So I really enjoyed doing that too. Made me a little more comfortable going on the bus with the bike. But yeah, come try it out, please.
Great idea.
Yeah, absolutely.
Excellent. That'll close 6.2 and move to 6.3 also at that.
All right. Four quick things. Shoreline cleanup was 25th. It was great. Over 100 people showed up. One of the best trash turnouts that, cleanups that we've had in quite a long time, despite their actually having another group clean up the area right before. So that was fantastic. I want to give a huge shout out to Violet Rice, who's on here, who did a lot of the organizing there and outreach. Also made a contact with Boy Chick Bagels. So had some great, great food there. Also, Bike to Wherever Day is happening. So EP is, our remote programs has been busy, lots of things going on in the spring season. Two events there. Also very excited to announce our Adopt a Spot program has now officially launched. We put out social media last week and we are going to be doing more releases this week. But if you go to emeryville.org/adopt-a-spot, you can go and adopt your own traffic circle now if you'd like, or go through the process. So please feel free to share that. And we have already had several people, I think four people sign up, and we have two groups that are in the process of various stages of the process of proposing their own projects as well. So very excited to work with them and move forward with that. And then last but not least, wanted to check in with both of you and see if there was interest in doing a tour of the Davis Street Materials Recovery Facility Station. So it's where a lot of our waste and recycling and other materials go to get sorted before they go and get processed elsewhere. Waste management runs it. It's a very cool facility where there's some pretty high-tech stuff going on and low-tech like bulldozers and things. But it's pretty interesting to see kind of where things go after you put them in your refuse streams. And they offered us the opportunity if there's interest. So I wanted to check with both of you and then we could plan out a couple of dates if so.
I've been before, and it's a really great experience just to see where, you know, how recycling and there's some compost in the mixed waste side that they work on. So I'm okay, but maybe if the rest of the council has, has everybody else been given the opportunity?
No, we were just starting with you first and wanted to check schedules, and then we're going to open it up beyond that.
Okay, yeah, so I'm good. I would be interested, though, in water treatment, if that's ever an option.
Okay.
I will also, all interested in the cycling and also
treatment. Okay, yeah, they definitely do public tours at the East Bay Mud facility. But I'll see, we actually just went on a staff one a while ago as part of our climate change internal.
Oh, okay.
So,
what did you think of it?
It was fantastically interesting. There's a lot of processes there that are just, I enjoyed learning about them. I don't have a lot of reference points. I haven't toured any other water treatment facilities, so.
This is like wastewater, right? Like
East Bay Mud. And then in the context of, okay, well, what do you do then? You have the wastewater, you treat it, storm overflow events, how do you make sure that's not going into the bay? Once it's treated, how do you get that out into the bay? How's sea level rise going to affect your facilities, your pipes, your where we're planning various different or different solutions that we're looking at, like, are they compatible, essentially?
Does all the water go into the bay, or is it ever cleaned up so well that it can go back into the water supply?
Both, actually. Not the water supply, but we do have recycled water.
Yeah.
That's the purple pipes you'll see around. And we actually have a pretty significant, all the way up Horton Street to the new, the Emery, I think, is as far as that spur goes. You'll see purple pipes on the side of the road.
And then there's also the connection between like solid waste and where don't they take the solid waste and that then becomes like a, I don't know what the term is, low end compost, right? Like you can take like sewage and essentially that can, I guess provide some nutrition, on to some compost applications.
Yeah. And actually they turn into energy. So they have like a methane whole facility there. They have a ton of engineers, a lot of really cool processes going on. But and that in and of itself is a whole complex process that they explain.
Yeah, I wondered about that. So yeah, if there's any way to set up something, I think that would also be beneficial.
Yeah, I'm definitely checking on that. And I apologize, Mr. Solomon. Was there interest on your part from the
Okay.
Send you some dates, see if you're interested in them, and then we can expand to other folks in the council.
Sounds good. Appreciate it. Any other questions on Mass Up updates?
Nothing from my end. Actually, there was one question when I did take a tour of the waste management facility. I asked them what percent, because they do methane capture off the landfill. And I mean, not that the landfill is there, but they can speak to the landfill. And they said that they use the methane that they capture to power their buses. And I asked them what percent of their buses are powered off of methane, and they never got back to me. And then I also asked them what percent of the methane that's emitted from the landfill is actually captured. And I'm missing that answer as well. So I think it would be very helpful to know that our waste management trucks are powered off of like essentially the fumes from trash as like first off, and secondly, that they do a good enough job capturing that methane energy that it's not going, we can then pride ourselves for not being as bad about, greenhouse gas emissions.
And are you looking for Emeryville specific trucks or like East Bay trucks?
Their operations, white waste management, I guess it could be a percent of their trucks. I don't assume they strictly allocate like a truck just to the border of Emeryville. Maybe they do, right?
Yeah. I mean, they have specific routes, but the trucks do occasionally get switched out. So,
okay. No. And then I know we also track complaints to waste management as well. You sometimes report out on that. And I remember last time they reported some complaints, complaint logs, and I had found that my complaints were missing from there. So I thought that was interesting record keeping, but I didn't hear back whether they changed their methodology. So those were three questions that I've kind of posed to them over the years and never gotten a response.
Yeah, I'd be happy to provide you some updates on that. And they typically attend these meetings, so I'll make sure we have a...
Well, if we could have a rep who can speak, if you could give them a heads up on these questions, I'd love to have somebody speak to those questions.
Absolutely.
Thanks, Matt.
So, I have no questions. So let's move to public comment. Any public comment on that, please?
Yeah, I just wanted to say thank you for the Adopt Spot program. I think it's really cool. And I wanted to give a shout out, official public comment, acknowledging Matt and Violet. I am trying to slowly put together a Friends of Thumb Scout Creek group, and we plan to apply to Adopt Spot in Thumb Scout Creek Park. So very excited for that. Thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate you doing that work. The Parks and Rec Committee, I'm sure, would love to.
Yes, I also have a comment just because, Matt, you're the reason I am in the pub in the Parks and Rec. I have a bike to anywhere day, and then also your trash collection. I used to drive all the way to Lake Merritt to pick up trash, and now I can stay local. But I appreciate everything you do, and I would love to go on the tours. I don't know if you can extend the offer to the Parks and Rec. Fascinating. And I have to say, being here tonight is super helpful to see, to hear your perspectives and your more insightful comments than I could think of by myself, but also just to see what the need for the interaction between the different committees, because we do overlap so much. It would be nice to have a little more conversation or free exchange, you know, happening, because I feel a little more isolated than I even knew I was.
Agreed. Thank you. I appreciate that.
May I add one small bit to that? I am slated to come to Parks and Rec Committee to talk about the Adopt
Spot program. Okay, good.
So it's coming. Don't worry.
Thank you. Well, I do have one other question on the Adopt Spot. I don't know if this is a good idea, if I feel strongly either way, will the list of people who have adopted a spot be available publicly?
That is at their choice. Okay. So when you adopt it, you can say, I would like to remain anonymous. They do get to choose, well, if it's a storm drain, they can name their storm drain.
Right.
But if it's a block, they just choose whether to put their name on it or to be anonymous.
Okay. I don't know if there was like a map.
Yes. So I guess the short answer is yes, all of that information does go to a GIS map that is on the Adopt Spot page.
Okay.
But if you just want to be anonymous, you can be anonymous. And so that actual information is not
there. Oh.
Question on Adopt a Spot. Could people like adopt a park and just pick up trash if they wanted to? And
well, I mean, we would love that. That's highly encouraging. I think we only opened it to limited areas like blocks specifically or traffic circles or drains, both because those are items that would assist our public works crews in their daily duties and reduce, you know, maintenance workload on us. And then also things like parks would be very popular, and then we'd be in the business of sorting out, well, who gets to adopt this park and who gets to adopt that park. And our Parks and Rec Committee actually hold regular Love Your Parks cleanups, and they rotate around the parks. I think if it becomes an issue, absolutely yes, it's something we can talk about. The other half of the Adopt a Spot program, which is on there on the website when you go, there's the various adopt and spot traffic circle drain, and then there's also Clean Cities, which is the program that we previously ran, where anybody can come and just use the city cleanup tools and do their own cleanup. So the short answer is yes, absolutely. You wouldn't get your name on the GIS map, but you are welcome to do that.
For the Adopt a Spot, can you still pick a, you can propose a spot still, right?
So that is more for the unique ideas or proposals, like if you want to do an ice plant removal and plant natives in a specific section that doesn't necessarily fall under trash pickup on beautification, and it's a little more extensive than just like trash grabbers, right? So that, then we'd want to work with those groups to identify exactly what the, you know, capacity they have and needs they have and how we can work together to make that work for the city.
Maybe just one thought on the going back to the park thing, because the goal is to, like, we're trying to alleviate work for public works, like the storm drain, the traffic circles, places where trash accumulates. I can always walk into any of our parks and just find, like, you know, there's always like litter wrappers, like there's things around. I don't know, and you mentioned it might be popular. If somebody wants to add their name, like adopt this park, and there's a handful of folks who want to adopt it, if it means that you get people who feel like, you know, a certain sense of pride and responsibility for picking up trash possibly in the park, there could be something there. And it would also alleviate, like, then I'm not taking pictures of cigarette butts and posting them on CClickFix, and Muhammad Public Works has to go send out a guy to pick up the cigarette butt and then mark it complete, and instead there's somebody who's proactively, you know, taking pride in keeping that park clean. I feel like there could be an opportunity there. I know there's maybe a bit more to think through besides like the storm drain one. But maybe that's something that could be brought up to the Parks and Rec Committee to think about. How could the Adopt a Spot program, if we wanted to expand it a bit to include parks, what special considerations there would be? Like, what would the recognition look like? Would it just be like a little a plaque of, you know, can we accommodate more than one interested party in adopting that park possibly? And might people be interested in that? In case there's something there, I mean, maybe it's just a headache with people, you know, competing to have their name on the park and they don't actually pick up anything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think we're trialing this kind of in a limited fashion to see how much interest there is. But to your point of fostering that civic pride, very much that is our goal. Part of this program too, like if you adopt a block or adopt a spot, you receive a reflective vest, a safety vest, and a trash grabber that becomes yours. And so now you're part of the community and you have a trash grabber and reflective vest that you can go out at any point, and you kind of have adopted your own spot. And we hope that increases, you know, both visibility, other people see you, but also your interest. So, I'm going on a dog walk. Sure, why not? I'll just take my trash grabber along. We'll see how that rolls out. But that's the long-term goal, at least.
Thanks, Matt.
Yeah.
Awesome. Thank you, Matt. That ends, closes 6.3. Moving to 6.4, capital improvement plan updates. Bill, are you doing this one?
Yep. Share my screen real quick.
I would spell some changes.
Yeah. We could just, anything that's updated since, yeah.
Go through this real quick. All right, so the stuff that's highlighted in yellow is what's been updated since the last meeting, or what was updated for this month. But we have the bridge maintenance program. That design inspection contract was awarded to West Janney Engineers, with project kickoff expected this month. We have the rehabilitation of city sewer lateral project that's continuing this month. You may have noticed work happening around City Hall in the last couple of weeks, so that's part of that project. Also have the Sustainable Streetscapes project, which is really winding down. They planted all of the green infrastructure in the last month. There was also work done on the green striping for the bike lanes and stuff at the Long Hollis Street. So that's all coming together. Emerville Loop presentations were made to BPAC last week and to this committee last month. So that's kind of for it. And as I think Matt mentioned, there'll be a poster kind of highlighting that project at like 2 hours a day this week. So that's getting the word out on that project. And then the Parks project, you had a presentation on that today. So that project's kind of moving forward. Yeah. don't take any questions.
No questions from me.
That's on me. Any public comment in the room on this? Any discussion?
No, I have no discussion topics.
Excellent. Thank you, Phil. Appreciate the presentation. That'll close 6.4. Any future agenda items? Speak to that.
There was one that we previously had on there that did not, maybe it dropped off, and I'm curious if something happened with it. So we had a study session on the geometry, materials of construction, and effectiveness of speed bumps that we use.
Oh, right. I remember that.
With a particular focus on the ones that were replaced on the Greenway with kind of the smooth, ineffective version.
That is something we're talking about, and just what wasn't added to the list. So sorry.
Okay.
That is something we do plan to bring.
Okay, thank you.
Any additional questions?
One other question. Now that we talked about the Greenway signage, we previously talked about no smoking signage going along the Greenway with a focus on, it would be kind of, people often see the benches along the Greenway as a place to go take their smoke breaks. And for people out running or exercising, biking, you're basically breathing in cigarette smoke along the Greenway, which is the opposite of the intent of the Greenway. So I think a lot of people just don't know that it's park space. And that item was about getting those signs up, particularly where there are benches where people might use those for smoke breaks. My question is whether we would use since we're putting up signage on the Greenway, we were told that the no smoking signs would kind of follow this overall sign project. And it sounds like we're kind of moving forward with the rest of the signs. So maybe just the question for staff, you can get back to us, is would the no smoking signs go up around the same time? Or what's the thinking with that?
I can get back to you with a more... exact answer, but I would think that that's the intention, that whatever we would put up around whatever no smoking messaging we would want to get out would be around the same time as all this other signage.
Okay, you know, sounds good. I had nothing in addition to what we have on there.
Okay. I don't think I have anything in addition on my end. So yeah, we can close seven. Any other announcements or member comments?
I received an email from Zach Unger about a project related